Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said Wednesday the Palestinians cannot continue to feel bound by agreements with Israel that are continually violated by the Jewish state. He says in comments to the UN General Assembly, he says we cannot continue to be bound by these signed agreements with Israel, and Israel must fully assume responsibility as an occupying power. The announcement is the most serious warning yet to Israel that he might walk away from engagement with Israel and dissolve the Palestinian Authority. In his remarks, Mr. Abbas said the Palestinians deserve full membership and recognition as a state at the United Nations. He says Palestine is an observer state at the United Nations, deserves full recognition and full membership. It is unconscionable, not in the light of all the enormous sacrifices we've made. Abbas delivered his address ahead of a ceremony to raise the Palestinian flag at the UN. The Russian Defense Ministry said on Wednesday that the country's air force had begun striking Islamic State militants in Syria, targeting military equipment, communication facilities and arms depots, as well as ammunition and fuel. The Kremlin sought to play down the decision. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the answer lies in diplomacy.
Assad will never be accepted by those that he has harmed. Never possible to become a legitimate leader in the future. Never possible to lead a reconciliation nor a unification of a country. That could not happen until he makes clear his willingness to actually heal the nation, end the war, and decline to be part of the long-term future.
This is VOA News. Burkina Faso's government says the military who led the recent short-lived coup has sought protection in a foreign embassy. It comes a day after the army opened fire on his supporters in the presidential guard to force them to disarm. In a communique Wednesday, the government said negotiations were underway for General Gilbert Diendere to give himself up. He spoke to the Associated Press and said he's willing to turn himself over to face justice and wants Burkina Faso to resolve its crisis through a dialogue. An alleged Islamist radical accused of helping to destroy historic buildings in Mali made his first appearance at the International Criminal Court Wednesday. During a brief hearing, Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi confirmed his identity but declined to make a statement. ICC prosecutors say Al-Mahdi directed or took part in attacks that demolished 9 historic mausoleums and a mosque in the city of Timbuktu during June and July of 2012. NATO said Wednesday its special forces are supporting Afghan troops in Kunduz after Taliban insurgents seized the city. Heavy fighting was underway near the city's airport where the government forces had retreated. Meanwhile, people living in Kunduz are evacuating after a third day of heavy fighting between government forces and Taliban insurgents. Afghan lawmakers, meanwhile, called on President Ashraf Ghani to resign over his government's shameful handling of the battle for Kunduz. Outside the building, but within parliament grounds, female lawmakers gathered to support the cause. This is Fatima Aziz. She says, we don't want to hear lies anymore. The government keeps telling us they're sending troops, but it's almost 72 hours that people inside the city have been suffering from a lack of food, water, and electricity. The Afghan army was supposed to be bolstered by its own reinforcements for the campaign to retake Kunduz, but attacks on convoys making their way to the city meant that backup troops were only trickling in. An Indian court sentenced 5 men to death on Wednesday for a series of bomb blasts that ripped through packed trains in Mumbai in 2006, killing nearly 200 people. Another 7 were found guilty of involvement in those attacks. All 12 men were convicted of murder, conspiracy, and waging war against the country. Meanwhile, a defense lawyer says all 12 will appeal the verdict. This is defense lawyer Yug Mohit Chaudhry.
The evidence in this case is shoddy, to say the least. It's not fit for conviction, let alone a death sentence.
Joaquin, formerly a tropical storm, has strengthened into a third hurricane of the 2015 Atlantic season, according to the U.S. National Hurricane Center Wednesday. Joaquin is now a Category 1 hurricane located about 395 kilometers east-northeast of the central Bahamas. The National Hurricane Center says Joaquin is expected to move over the Bahamas Wednesday night. I'm Frances Alonso.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, first and foremost, speed is of the essence. Many times, even in the best case scenarios, we're seeing that the process of asylum can take between 6 and 18 months. Now, that's an eternity in the life of a child.
That's Sarah Crow of UNICEF, who says millions of children are suffering in the migrant and refugee crisis. Details coming up.
Also, judges have ordered the French government to seize the financial assets of Denis Sassou Nguesso, the president of the Republic of Congo. And Nigeria's president has taken over the country's oil ministry.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius ruled out a delay in October 18th elections for the Central African Republic, a former French colony. The French news agency says Fabius spoke at the UN General Assembly as interim president Catherine Samba-Panza rushed home from the New York meetings to try to quell sectarian violence that broke out in Bangui, the capital, several days ago. UN peacekeepers are working to contain the unrest, in which an estimated 37 people have died. Fabius praised the role of the interim president, but said popular elections must go forward. The October vote is an attempt to restore democracy after Muslim rebels called Seleka overthrew the government in 2013 and clashed with Christian militias.
Burkina Faso army units loyal to interim president Michel Kafando now occupy the barracks of Presidential Guard elite. Smoke rose from the barracks this morning as the elite troops fled and their short-lived coup d'etat came to an end. From an undisclosed location and through a local radio station broadcast, the coup's leader, General Gilbert Diendera, asked followers to lay down their arms. There are unconfirmed reports that the general has sought asylum in the Vatican embassy.
Slovakia is taking legal action at the European Court of Justice against plans to force all member states of the European Union to accept a quota system for more than 120,000 migrants. Slovakia is one of four countries opposed to the quota system. In other refugee news, police have forced an undetermined number of migrants from a camp in Ventimiglia near the French border. More than 130,000 migrants have landed in Italy this year. As migrant flows have shifted north, about 19,000 Iraqis have applied for asylum in Finland. Only Germany has welcomed larger numbers.
In related news, the United Nations holds a high-level meeting at 19 UTC to discuss the migrant and refugee crisis. Prior to the meeting, UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, has released a new report that says conflicts and instability in five countries have uprooted at least 4.5 million children. Sarah Crow is UNICEF's Chief of Crisis Communication. From UN headquarters in New York, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about how the migrant and refugee crisis is affecting children.
Children are really at the heart of this crisis. We've seen the heart-rending pictures that have really pulled at the heartstrings of people around the world and really triggered off this deep sense of compassion and solidarity all around Europe as children are on the move. But it's also a reminder, really, of what's happening on the ground in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and the neighboring countries that have shouldered the biggest burden of the refugee crisis there. We know already that 2.7 million children, Syrian children, are out of school, and one out of every four of their schools are destroyed. So this is a reason why they are on the move. We should not be surprised that the crisis is what it is right now.
Now, what is the condition of the children? Are you finding them more susceptible to the stress of this crisis?
Well, children always do have an element of resilience. But what we're seeing at every step of the way, whether it's in the refugee camps in Syria and the neighboring countries, or indeed where the majority of refugees and displaced children are, which means they're in host communities, or children on the move through countries such as Serbia, former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, and Croatia, and then as they move into Western Europe. And UNICEF is quite unlike many of the other agencies, as we're involved in various levels, you know, whether it's in the industrialized countries with Germany, Austria, and so on, and offering our assistance and our expertise in child protection there, or indeed in a very sort of hands-on the ground in the neighboring countries as well as the countries that children are passing through. And what our colleagues are telling us and what they've seen, children are exhausted. They're dehydrated very often because they've been walking a long time. I mean, the majority of them are combining their journey with taxis, buses, some on foot, some on trains, as we've seen. And of course, this means that they have blisters, that they're exhausted, that they're not getting proper food along the way, really, because they're living on canned foods and dried foods. So they're in need of kind of decent hot meals, but they very often do not want to stay in the countries that they're passing through with their families, of course. And we're now looking at 133,000 children between January and July who have sought asylum in Europe. And this, of course, then underlines further how this is hitting children. It's an 80% increase on the numbers of children who sought asylum from last year.
But the children are not just from Syria, are they?
Absolutely not, no. The majority are from Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq, but then there are also some who are coming through from various other parts, such as Eritrea, Somalia. But if we look at the movement of people and children globally, the majority of refugees do go to the countries that are right next to the countries that are in conflict or from which they're fleeing. So that means that Somalis go to Kenya, that people in South Sudan go to Uganda, and it's the generosity of those countries that have, you know, hosted refugees over a long period of time that really is remarkable, and we have to remember that that's how to deal with it, is really by opening their hearts and their homes.
What is UNICEF recommending to do about this?
Well, first and foremost, speed is of the essence. Many times, even in the best case scenarios, we're seeing that the process of asylum can take between 6 and 18 months. Now, that's an eternity in the life of a child. So that needs to be speeded up. You know, the search and rescue operations at sea and on land need to be speeded up. It's important, of course, that we remind all authorities at all times to be guided by the laws and the legal instruments that they already have at their disposal, Convention of the Rights of the Child, the 1951 Refugee Convention, which guides them in the best interests of the child, so that children should never be prosecuted or detained for simply being refugees or migrants. So we're looking forward to some leadership on this issue.
Sarah Crowe is UNICEF's Chief of Crisis Communications from UN headquarters in New York. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Thirteen minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, prosecutors in Paris say judges have ordered the French government to seize the financial assets of members of the family of Denis Sassou Nguesso, the president of the Republic of Congo. Reuters reports that the judge's decision is based on lengthy investigations of several African leaders who have deposited assets in French banks. Mr. Sassou Nguesso has served as president for 32 years. The prosecutors call his family's wealth ill-gotten gains. A lawyer for Sassou Nguesso was, not available to comment.
Nigeria's president has taken over the country's oil ministry. Nigeria is suffering from dropping oil price and runaway corruption in the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation. President Muhammadu Buhari told Reuters in New York that he has named himself Minister of Petroleum Resources. Mr. Buhari called the extent of corruption in the NNPC mind-boggling. Mr. Buhari faces major security and economic difficulties, including a six-year war with Boko Haram insurrectionists. He took office in May and quickly replaced much of the nation's military leadership. He has delayed naming most members of the new cabinet. He told reporters outside meetings at the UN General Assembly this week he will make remaining cabinet appointments soon.
As Sierra Leone starts the 42-day countdown to being declared Ebola-free, The National Red Cross is using mobile radios to remind people about Ebola prevention. Nina DeVries has more from Freetown.
Isha Wilson-Clark stands outside the Mountain Cut community in the east part of Freetown. She tells residents to avoid body contact of any kind and remember to always call 117, the emergency hotline, if you're experiencing vomiting, high fever, or other possible Ebola symptoms. What makes this awareness campaign unique is that these skits are broadcast on mobile radios that the Red Cross provides to communities. Wilson-Clark takes questions from the audience while people in other communities listen in.
This radio in the box, it is a participatory drama. Not only we act for them, but we need the voice of the people. We communicate with them. We ask them what they understand.
Sierra Leone discharged its last confirmed Ebola case on September 27th. The country must now go 42 days with no cases before the World Health Organization can declare it Ebola-free. Broadcasting officer for the Red Cross, Edward Alucius Renner, says the mobile radio project keeps people talking about Ebola so they don't get complacent.
It's something that excites them and wants them to tell their stories. So it's an easy way of getting the stories from the people.
He says the performances teach people that an ambulance does not mean a death sentence. At the peak of the crisis, people saw patients going into ambulances and never coming out, and many are still afraid.
The program fine. We all happy for them program there.
Watching the Red Cross performance in Mountain Cut, resident Zainoub Kanu says the skit is especially good for parents with young kids like her, who may have been reluctant to call 117. The Red Cross plans to expand the program throughout Freetown. Ebola has killed 4,000 people in Sierra Leone and more than 11,000 people across West Africa. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The World Health Organization has issued what are called groundbreaking guidelines for the treatment of HIV/AIDS. The WHO recommends starting ART, antiretroviral therapy, as soon after infection as possible. The WHO also recommends that PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, be used as a prevention tool for those at substantial risk of acquiring HIV. PrEP is the use of drugs normally used to treat those already infected as a means of avoiding initial infection. Among those praising the new guidelines is Michelle Warren, head of the AIDS advocacy organization, AVAC. From New York, he spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
This is an important day. The guideline released this morning by the World Health Organization is what they're calling an early release. I believe the 2015 consolidated guidelines for antiretrovirals for treatment and prevention are due out at the end of the year. But they came out early today with a statement that antiretroviral treatment should be offered to anybody who is infected upon their diagnosis with HIV. And at the same time, they make an incredibly strong and important recommendation that oral pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, should be offered to individuals at risk of infection. Those are two recommendations that really set the stage for transforming the AIDS response.
Well, let me ask you first about ART, antiretroviral therapy. Why give it the moment you find out that a person has been infected instead of waiting, as they have in the past, for the immune cell count, the CD4 count, to drop a little bit?
Fantastic question, and it's one that has evolved over many years. For over a decade, there have been questions about when to start antiretroviral treatment. And two really important pieces of data have come out over the last couple of years. The first finding was that providing antiretroviral treatment earlier after diagnosis provided a protective benefit, that it reduced the risk of transmitting HIV, and providing treatment early was good prevention. A sister study came out called the START study that was trying to assess when is the best time to start. And they found an overwhelming result that the earlier treatment was started, the better it was for the health of the individual. So we have the powerful message there that treatment is life-saving and better to start early for the individual. So it has the individual benefit, and it has the public health benefit of also reducing the risk of transmitting HIV.
Let's talk about PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. Another way of putting it, I guess, is treatment as prevention. And the WHO is recommending expanded use of this. Tell us about that.
This really is the added piece of the puzzle. And with the PrEP studies, they've been looking particularly at one drug, tenofovir, either alone or in combination with another drug, emtricitabine. And the data over the last 5 years have shown us that in very different populations for people at risk, that if you take that particular antiretroviral drug before exposure to HIV, an uninfected individual can reduce his or her chance of becoming infected. The recommendation today that says individuals at substantial risk of HIV, whether they are gay men or other men who have sex with men, whether they are heterosexual men or women at risk, whether they are people who are at risk because they might be injecting drugs, all can benefit from oral PrEP.
The WHO is recommending expanded treatment and prevention options. And of course, this will probably cost more money because you would need more drugs. So do you know how much more money, and in the long run, is it cheaper to treat people now or do prevention now than treat illnesses that may crop up as a result of HIV infection?
While we celebrate and are excited by these guidelines, we also have to recognize that this is a bold and audacious challenge ahead of us. Fundamentally, this would cost more. If we were to offer treatment to the 36 million people who are already infected and provided PrEP to those people at substantial risk, you know, this has not been fully costed, and that needs to happen with urgency from WHO and PEPFAR and the Global Fund. And then we need to understand where can those resources come from and where and how best to spend those resources. But we do know this, that the sooner we prevent and the sooner we treat, the less we will spend in the long run.
That's Mitchell Warren, head of the AIDS advocacy organization, AVAC, from New York. He spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and attention to the disease is getting a boost from U.S. Congress. The bipartisan Congressional Ovarian Cancer Caucus was officially launched in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, September 29th. Its goal is to bring more awareness and research to the deadly disease, which takes the lives of over 14,000 women every year. Two U.S. representatives, Sean Duffy of Wisconsin and Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, came together after both were personally touched by ovarian cancer. Representative DeLauro is a 29-year survivor of ovarian cancer, and Representative Duffy's sister is an ovarian cancer survivor. Duffy also lost a very good friend to the disease. Kalanit Bala is the CEO of the Ovarian Cancer National Alliance. She says the caucus will remind the U.S. Congress of the need for funding.
The Alliance has been working for nearly 18 years now, and with, you know, a lot of champions on the Hill, we've been able to raise about $2.2 billion for research and awareness. But this caucus is going to be really focused on continuing that awareness all year round on the Hill, you know, through members, as well as focusing on increasing some of those appropriations for research and education.
While the survival rate for ovarian cancer has improved, the Ovarian Cancer National Alliance points out there is still no test for early detection, and symptoms are often confused with other diseases, leaving 85% of women diagnosed in a late stage. Over 50% of these women will not live past 5 years of being diagnosed. However, Bala stresses they are starting to see light at the end of the tunnel in the form of genetics.
We've had obviously a huge shift in genetics and starting to understand the genetics of not only how germ mutation, or what we would call a natural mutation, might put somebody at elevated risk, made famous by Angelina Jolie, whose mother died of ovarian cancer. She had that BRCA gene and, you know, had a prophylactic double mastectomy and an oophorectomy. So that's changing because we have some preventative things that we think we might be able to do.
Bala said they are also starting to understand the genetics of the tumors themselves, which leads to what she describes as precision medicine.
That term meaning if we understand the tumors better, not only in ovarian cancer, but in cancer in general, then we understand what therapies might be more effective than others.
Another big shift has been in treatment, such as IP chemotherapy for ovarian cancer.
That's a very new thing, really only in the last several years, and it's considered a very effective treatment can be very effective for women who can tolerate it.
One woman who has been keeping a close eye on research and development for ovarian cancer is survivor Clara Frank. We brought you Clara's story earlier in the year. After numerous visits to various doctors for unexplained symptoms, Clara was eventually diagnosed with stage 3 ovarian cancer. She offers this advice to all women.
Always be aware of what your body is telling you. Anything that is out of the ordinary needs to be checked by a doctor. In my case, my symptoms were so wide-ranging that you would have had to have been a pretty clever doctor to connect the dots back to ovarian cancer.
Clara's symptoms included intense joint pain. She also had intense gastrointestinal pain, which sent her to a gastroenterologist. Other symptoms were acid reflux, shortness of breath, and most tellingly, an extended abdomen.
I was gaining weight like crazy, but only around my midsection. If you look at pictures of me from that era, that period back in 2013, my face was very, very gaunt, but my abdomen was enormous. I looked like I was pregnant.
Finally, for Clara, the right doctor at the right time examined the skin over her abdomen and was able to make the connection that something was very wrong.
The bloating that one feels with ovarian cancer is not like the once-a-month bloating that women experience. It is a very tight bloating that feels like pregnancy, and the skin is very tight. So by feeling my abdomen, he knew that there was something wrong.
After analyzing the treatment options, which included some very aggressive treatment plans, Clara chose the one that best fit into her busy lifestyle. Instead of getting an initial aggressive simple dose of chemotherapy every 3 weeks, which would leave her very weak and too tired to work, she chose to wear a patch that would administer the medication at a slower rate.
I mean, I was still weak and tired, but I could function. I could come to work. I could walk. I could go shopping. That for me was very important, but that might be an option that may not be available for everyone.
Clara is not just a survivor. She's an advocate of ovarian cancer awareness. She shares information with others through her Cancer Diary blog under DC Media Girl, which can be seen on YouTube. And for Clara and many other ovarian cancer survivors and fighters, the color teal has a special meaning.
We have a lot of activity around that teal color. We have a campaign called Teal is Personal, Teal is Love. I feel like teal has almost become a verb as well as a noun, and people really use it to identify the ovarian cancer community. And that doesn't matter what organization you're a part of in the United States and actually even in other countries.
Early detection is a key to surviving ovarian cancer. And as Clara and other survivors advocate, if you detect something is wrong with your body, see a doctor and don't give up until you get the answers you need. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Partey, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news? interviews, analysis. We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.